smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Rob Cesarino here with you tonight after a very eventful and important night of Survivor, the two-hour merge episode. No Stephen Fishback, as he picked one heck of a time to travel outside of the country. But I am really excited to have with us our international Survivor superstar. Please welcome, making her know-it-all's debut, the great Shannon Gates. Shannon, how are you?
Rob, I'm doing my first ever video podcast, my first ever live podcast on an episode that had a trigger warning to begin it. I'm feeling really great. This is a lot.
It's a lot. Shannon, thank you for being here with us. That we have, you know, a lot of stuff that is not fun to talk about. This isn't necessarily the reason why people watch Survivor. I saw a lot of people say that, hey, I'm done. Check please on this season. But I do think that there is a lot of important stuff that we need to talk about. And I really appreciate you being here with myself and with all of the people who watch tonight and are really, could you see some help to process what we just saw for 2 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I need a little bit of help processing it. Good. I think I have some takes, but I usually like to, you know, watch the episode several times before I podcast. I think this episode in particular would have really benefited from that.
Sure.
I also usually like to be in my pajamas podcasting, but that's just like a personal thing. But we're doing something a little different tonight, and I think we're going to get into some really important stuff. I feel thankful to have the platform to talk about it here.
Okay. All right. Well, happy to have you here with us to talk it all through. We'll take some questions as well. Hashtag RHAP. And let's see how that goes, please. I know everybody is going to be, hopefully you're talking about this in a mature and a respectful way about everything that we saw tonight, just to set the stage of what's coming up in our coverage over the next couple of days. That I will not have an exit interview tomorrow with our two people who were voted out tonight, Kelly and Jamal. And that's not fun to say that either of those two people were voted out in this episode, but I will be speaking with them early next week. So we will have exit press with them, but as I understand, it is delayed until early next week. So be on the lookout for an eventual exit interview with Kelly and Jamal. I will be speaking to a Kelly tomorrow, and that would be Kelly Wentworth, who I'm very excited to catch up with. It's been quite some time since we were able to speak on the podcast, and so I think that she is a great person to speak to about everything that's going on and all of these different issues. So really looking forward to that. And then on this week's feedback show, we're going to do it a little bit differently. I'm going to be joined by the First Lady of Podcasting, Nicole Cesarino, and we're going to talk to maybe a couple of other guests as we continue this conversation over the next couple of days. All right. But Shannon, big story tonight here was this situation with Dan, which has been a storyline over the course of the season about how women have felt that he has been, if not inappropriate, then certainly making people uncomfortable. And we saw Kelly talk about her discomfort with that, and then the rare breaking of the fourth wall where we got to see Kelly talking things through with the Survivor producers. What was your reaction to, at first, seeing the producer involvement to the show?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciated seeing it given to us objectively. Like, you know, these women are telling true things that happened to them. What we're going to pass out through this conversation is, I think, how each of them individually reacted to it. But no one was lying about what Dan was doing. I mean, he was legitimately touching people's toes. And I just want to say, like, on the record, like, never touch
anyone's
toes. Gross,
right.
Never. No one. I don't even want to touch my own toes. So, you know, I appreciated kind of seeing that fourth wall of being given to us in kind of a montage form to show us that these women were talking their legitimate truth based on what had actually happened. You know, in terms of what the producers were doing, it's a hard one. You know, based on how Kelly felt, that sucks to see. Anyone who looks at my Twitter knows I'm a Kelly stan. I love her. She's a smart, cool, great player. I'm devastated that she went with two idols in her pocket after what she went through tonight. It's painful. And, you know, I think that I understand where the producers are coming from when they ask her, what should we do? But I also think it's unfair to put that on her. I think if they are seeing her be that uncomfortable, they should be taking the initiative to do something to maybe take him out of the game rather than giving her that choice. Because if she says yes, it's still gameplay. If she says take him out, that's still a strategic, because everything in the game is strategic, but that's still a choice she's made in the game. And to give her that choice, I think, was the wrong move. I think producers then have to take the initiative and be God in that sense.
So I think that this is going to be one of the main conversations that comes out of this episode of did they do enough at the point where she's reporting what's going on? And her story is corroborated by some of the other women. But again, I don't know, in their one-on-ones with the producers, but, you know, it turned into that then some of the women, specifically Elizabeth, was then saying, yeah, I said that, but I didn't mean it. And so I was just trying to string her along. And that's when I said that to her and to Janet, because we didn't really feel uncomfortable, or I was uncomfortable, but I was like joking around. So at the point where then Kelly is uncomfortable and they tell us on the screen that Dan was given a warning at that point, do you feel like is that going far enough? Because it would be, I think, you know, a very difficult situation to pull him from the game at that point in time. But is that what should be done?
It's such a hard one. It's such a hard one because it's something that's been going on since episode one, that Kelly is having that conversation with him to the detriment of her own social game very, very early on. So it's kind of crazy that this was the first warning.
Mm-hmm.
But to talk about how the other woman felt, which is something I think we're going to talk a lot about, that to me is super, super complex.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters. I think that anything that they're doing should be based on how Kelly feels. That's enough. She is upset. She is crying. She is emotionally distressed by this. That's enough for producer intervention for what they feel. And if Elizabeth and Missy are saying, like, look, we're fine, it doesn't really matter to me based on the context of how Dan and Kelly are doing. I think that's a separate thing.
You know, in terms of the producer intervention and, okay, we saw the card. All right, at this point, Dan was given a warning. It almost seems like that Dan was oblivious to that he got a warning, not that his actions were continuing, but the fact that this was an issue for anybody seemed like surprising to him moving forward. Where, I mean, I don't know if Jeff wanted to, you know, say at the tribal council, like, yeah, Dan, you did get a warning from producers that you were on strike two. So I don't know why this is a shock to you that this is coming up and that people are thinking about this. I don't know why you're so clutching your pearls of like, oh, I can't believe that the people are saying this. Like, you were warned by production, and assuming that you know, they told him that this was the case, I don't understand why he's so shocked about all this.
And even so, in his conversation with Janet, she's like, the conversation we had today with the producers was about you. And he was like surprised by that. He shouldn't have been surprised. The warning should have been in no uncertain terms. You know, to have a group discussion about, you know, personal boundaries, it's like, it's not a group discussion, is it? It's a Dan discussion. And maybe they weren't clear enough, and it made it seem like it was an everyone problem when it was a Dan problem.
Yeah. And where this got so complicated was that, you know, in the context of Survivor, which I think in some ways complicates it, but I think it's probably also a reflection of how these things actually do play out, where not everybody's interests were aligned in necessarily getting rid of Dan. And so for a lot of the people where it did not serve them to get rid of Dan, I think that they were willing to overlook it, where I think the crux of the whole conflict in the episode was that for Janet, it was, okay, I'm putting the game aside. This is a moral issue for me. I'm going to take out, I'm going to go with the women and I'm going to vote out Dan, where I think a lot of the other players were saying like, well, you know, and maybe it's subconsciously, I'm going to make the more self-interested move and I'm not worried about this right now. It's not happening.
But it wasn't just self-interest. And this is the thing that really took me by surprise in this episode. I was ready for Dan to be a creep. Like, it's been a thing the whole season, right? And I think that's the most black and white part of this whole episode. What Dan, how Dan made Kelly feel in particular is black and white terrible. She should not have to feel that way. It should not be a part of her game. That is just objectively bad. But the thing that I was not expecting was the approach of the other people. And I kind of have to put it on Missy and Elizabeth, because it's not just like, I'm self-interested, Kelly, I'm sorry, I don't really care how you feel, I can't get rid of Dan at this point. That's its own thing, that's bad. But let's talk about Missy and Elizabeth used this. They didn't just not do anything about it. They particularly used it. That's how I feel, and it's really, really hard for me to speak for them about how uncomfortable they were. I do believe they were a bit uncomfortable. I mean, they hadn't played with Kelly and it was a topic of conversation, but they did not feel how Kelly felt. They elevated it to where they were acting like how she felt. They said the line, and I have to take them at their word. Missy said to Elizabeth, this is our only play and we have to play it up. Mm-hmm. That is strategy. This was used for strategy. And like Kelly's confessional, where she's so upset about it, she's not just upset for herself. She's saying, I'm so upset that a few of us feel this way and that nothing is being done about it. So they played her, and later, you know, they talk about how they played Janet and she feels like she got played. She did get played. They played it up. It was strategically used. It was used in manipulation. The way that Kelly felt, she felt heard by these women. She shouldn't have felt heard. They used it to try and bond with her. And to an extent, I feel they used it to take Missy's name off the block and to get Dan's name off the block. Like, strategically, as an analyst, I'm impressed by it strategically. But then, do I feel icky about it? Like, yes, very icky. You know, from Dan's perspective, even, possibly he doesn't even, you know, he doesn't even deserve that. He has done all the things that they said, and he has to cop to it. But they have obviously fanned the flames. And yes, he started the fire. So again, he has to cop to it. He's like the least of my priorities. But they did do that to him. Then much, much worse is what they did to Janet and to Kelly. You know, for Kelly to feel hurt in that situation, to feel like they're in this together, and for them to basically be hyping it up and to be amping it up and using it as strategy. And for Janet to, she had a good relationship with Dan, to, as she said, work against her strategic interests because she is the protective mother hen and she felt for these girls and they were not being truthful with her. And she couldn't believe that this would be used as gameplay, but it was gameplay. And I think that's the thing that I'm contending with, having just watched the episode.
Yeah. Thank you for putting such a fine point on all of that, that was very, very well done. Do you feel like that then, if we have no idea what Dan thinks about this, we have no idea how Dan feels, do you feel like that the way that the gameplay muddied the waters, do you feel like that he feels vindicated tonight? Or do you think that he might be apologetic about how this all went down?
You know, to Dan's credit, which might be like the worst sentence someone could say on a
very bad sentence.
Yeah, he did seem contrite if it was genuine. Even, you know, he talked about Kelly at the tribal council. Like, he's done the wrong thing, and Kelly already told him, and he's been given a warning. And it's like he's had a million chances, but at the same time, this is obviously who he is. This is his behavior. These are his mannerisms that he's had for decades. It's something he needs to police a lot more than he's doing. And he doesn't seem to be aware of that. And hopefully this is a wake-up call for him to not treat people like that. But I do think it muddied the waters, because his main allies, Missy and Elizabeth, came to him and I think quite genuinely were like, it didn't make us that uncomfortable. They obviously do have to say that because they're desperate for allies and they have to work with him. And that's how the game gets so complicated. But they did hype it up. And then if they're saying it's not true for them, then it kind of becomes like, oh, well, it was never true at all. But it was true for Kelly. And unfortunately, she wasn't there at that point. She'd been voted out. I also can't speak for Molly, who was name checked here. They couldn't give their perspective. So every woman in the game at that point was like, it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, it makes Dan think like it was just gameplay. But it was both. It was gameplay for some of them. And it was very, very real for Kelly. And that deserves to be acknowledged as well.
Yeah. For Dan, shouldn't the warning have been back when in the first episode? And I'm not talking about the warning from production, but there was the conversation where Kelly was talking with Jan. And I will in the next couple of days go back and watch that first episode to see how that played out. But the social cues at that point was that, hey, this is not working for me. People are uncomfortable with this. Shouldn't he have picked up on that from day three?
Absolutely. But this is a man who touches people's toes. Like, it might be a little hard to get
right
through him.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, Kelly's been saying the whole time, and even when she came back from Island of the Idols after just having that conversation with him, a lot of people pointed out he like kissed her on the head. Don't be kissing people on the head as well. It's another thing, like the toes, like don't be doing that. So yes, of course, he's done super wrong. He's made Kelly uncomfortable. He has not listened when people have come to him directly. I'm sure it is based on decades of this being who he is as a human being. He is a touchy-feely person. He's obviously never been called out on it in his professional life, which is a little alarming and maybe speaks to a little bit of where we are in society. Yes, after episode one, it should have never been spoken about again. It's sad that it got to this point, for sure.
Yeah. It really is so tricky to unravel all of this, because it seemed like there would have been a coalition of people who were willing to vote out Dan, where it would have been, that was a number from Vokai, and it seemed like that the people from Old Lyro who swapped over, they would have been up for doing it, and then it seemed like that there were enough people from New Lyro or from New Lyro who would have been on board to do it with Janet and Jamal and Karishma and Nora, and they would have gotten together, but Kelly just happened to say with Janet to Tommy, hey, let's vote out Missy. Missy seems like the threat. And then that one remark of, hey, we should go after Missy here, really sent this whole thing spiraling.
Yeah, and I see why she would want to take out Missy. Missy's sure a huge threat. She wins immunity the next time. She's someone that hasn't worked with Kelly. She's like a really core member of this Lyro 4. Like, Kelly should want to take her out. Strategically, I think she misjudged Missy's relationship to her old Vokai allies. So that's a strategic thing. And it's just so messy how it works into the Dan thing in terms of strategy. At these big mergers, often you do go for this like really easy vote. And the person who's making people uncomfortable can be the easy vote from a moral perspective, maybe should have been the easy vote, but the stakes were higher at this vote because there really were some voting blocks, I think, coming together. There was a Lyro 4, there was Tommy, Lauren, and Dan to a degree. And then there was like Karishma with Kelly, Janet, Jamal, and Nora, and Dan kind of by himself. So these people were all trying to team up in a way that like maybe losing Dan wouldn't have really behooved them. So it had to be a really, really strong vote. So I see what Kelly was trying to do, but unfortunately she misjudged the relationships. And the second unfortunate thing is that she was dealing with this at all to begin with. Like, the game of Survivor isn't uncomfortable and complicated enough. Like, I think that makes it more complex as well, but she has to think about how she can function day to day, let alone actually strategize within this game.
Shannon, do you feel like that part of this also was that, like, that, you know, once Dan had this attached to his name, and the way that the game has, you know, continued to shift, where we talk about, okay, well, nobody's going to vote for Karishma, nobody's going to vote for Nora, why would we vote them out? Where now Dan has this attached with him. Do you feel like that in some way that that's helping his game and helping him stick around in terms of somebody that, okay, now he has this black cloud over him that everybody knows about. So he'd be a great person to sit next to in the final three. Let's make sure he doesn't go home.
I mean, the final three is Karishma, Nora, and Dan at this point, right? Like, they all have a bit of that for very, very different reasons. Why will they vote him out? Just objectively, take relationships out of it, take all of this out of it. Do I want Dan still in the game, who's not an immunity threat, who's not a strategic threat, who's obviously not a jury threat, versus Missy? Like, take Missy out any day of the week, take out Jamal, take out Kelly. Like, these are players in the game, and players have gone home so far this season.
The whole thing with the Janet argument about, you know, that this is, I'm doing this because this is the right thing to do, not because it is the right strategic move. That, do you have any sort of context in terms of that other times in Survivor history where that battle was weighed out in terms of the right moral move to make versus the right strategic move to make?
Is there that? Because Vana was going home anyway.
Yes.
Something recently happened on Survivor South Africa with a victim in that lost out.
Mm-hmm.
Shireen went home. Do people make the moral decisions on Survivor? Is this the show that we're watching? I think it is. I mean, it's real. These people are playing for their families. These people are playing for $1 million.
Yeah.
That's not nothing. And people do put their gameplay first. Even Kelly was going to set aside, and you know, that's her prerogative, but she was going to try and set aside what she had for the best gameplay move. We're not out here playing like an LRG. Like, this is for money. This is a life-changing amount of money. You can't really blame people, I think, for making that strategic move. I mean, maybe we should be blaming the game and not the players, mm-hmm. because it puts them, yeah. in this environment. But it is hard not to look at the players like, oh my God, this was icky tonight.
But I do think that you touched on something interesting, because with the situation with Shireen, you know, and we had this, I know you're not a Big Brother person, but, you know, certainly it comes
maybe
up
in Big Brother.
Well, yeah, man, Big Brother's not looking so bad. Right. So that with Big Brother 21, where that there was a situation where everybody came out against one person, where Nicole specifically in Big Brother 21, who was sort of like the, you know, ended up being the scapegoat, the person who was sort of the bearer of bad news. And I do think that there is something ugly in sort of the, you know, groupthink of, hey, this person is painting us out to be bad people. You know, she's the bad person. It's not, we're not the bad people. It's she's doing this and we're all united against her because she's, you know, making us into the bad guy.
Yeah, now that you've said it, that does feel like a little bit of a running theme in some of those examples that Survivor South Africa won. Shireen, for example, I hated how this happened to Janet tonight. I mean, I just want to go out and say it because I feel like a lot of people need it voiced, is that Janet is Wonder Woman.
We stan Janet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, we stan it because she, I want her to be my mother hen. And they called her the godmother in this episode, which is really fitting from an Australian Survivor perspective.
Mm-hmm.
She was so awesome. And for her, she couldn't do it. She made, as she said, a move against her strategic interests because she couldn't allow these girls that were telling her they were super uncomfortable. She couldn't do that. And like, it has to speak to her humanity that she did that. And she did get played. Strategically, she completely got played. But as a human, like, did she get the human fishy? Like, is that something that Steven does?
No, oh, definitely. Steve, no, he doesn't care, okay. about humanity. But
well,
we can do that.
The humanity fishy, because tonight, I mean, what a bright spot in an otherwise like very unfortunate episode.
The best human out there right now. And so,
yeah, best human award.
And, you know, I feel, I don't mean to trivialize it by talking about it in the context of the game, but I feel like that at the same time that that's also what we're here to do. But before we get too much into the game talk, I mean, where do we go from here, Shannon? Do you think that this now, okay, this continues to linger, or do you feel like that we, Dan, hopefully he's learned his lesson, we can somehow have a rest of the game after this?
Yeah. Has Dan learned his lesson? I mean, Dan is his own thing. Then beyond that, it's also we have to contend with the fact that people saw Kelly in this state and not only didn't put her feelings first, but also used her feelings to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I still like Missy and I still like Elizabeth. And, you know, they're in the situation I've never been in. Being one of the only know-it-alls who wasn't actually on Survivor. I'm not sure what insight I can give there. I don't know if I can judge them for that. It's not a good feeling to think about how they took Kelly's very real emotions about this and said the words, play it up. This is our only play. Like, it's not a play to Kelly. This was very real to Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And they used it as a play. So it's not just Dan. I think we have to contend with a lot of these people, not Janet, she's the best person in the world, but a lot of these other people of what they've done.
Of anybody, Kelly was probably the one the person that was, you know, who seemed to be the most victimized, and also was the person who was willing to put it, you know, behind her and saying like, okay, well, yeah, that's not my best strategic move. I still think that we should go after Missy.
I hate that was a decision she had to make. Like, mm-hmm. that makes my skin crawl for this woman who is, again, as I said, love her, so cool, so smart. And she's literally sitting there on Survivor and thinking, do I feel this uncomfortable tomorrow for my strategic game? And making the decision that she has to.
Right.
This is the show that we watch. It's very, very real. And that's very ugly.
And that the entire course of events that, you know, the survivor gods present her with not one but two idols.
God. And can't even talk about
and the narrative of what could have been, where then if she played one of them at this tribal council, and then she sends the very person who made her uncomfortable out of the game at the tribal council. And it's so...
Survivor isn't scripted.
Yeah. If anybody is like, oh, Survivor's fixed, there's your number, exhibit A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yeah, that the victim in all of this, the person crying over this horrible situation she's in, goes home with two idols. Did Angelina curse all women, is what I'm thinking. Since she very rightfully talked about women not finding idols, by my count, this is the fourth and fifth idol that have gone home in a woman's
Well,
pocket.
Look, now, you know, if women are going to find the idols, they're going to go home with them like the men do.
I
also
know, it's a horrible curse. I mean, Janet didn't go home. She played it when she didn't need to, which is way better. Mm-hmm. But so before Angelina said anything, before we were cursed, I think it was only Andrea who technically didn't even find the idol. And since then, five idols. It's like laughably terrible. It was like one of just like a few bleak things tonight, I think. Mm-hmm. But
it was a very bleak night. Perhaps the bleakest.
not the fairy tale ending. You know, there's another ending where like Kelly and Janet play their idols and then like ride off on a white horse. And that was not what we saw tonight.
Right. I want to just bring Jamal into this as well, because it was then another gut punch to have Jamal go out in this episode, especially after he also was such a vocal defender of Kelly. And again, had another really great moment at that second tribal council where Aaron kind of like comes in out of, left field to say like, hey, I would know about it if anything was going on.
Yeah,
if anybody's being, anything inappropriate was going on, I would know. Okay. My mom is a woman. My sisters are women.
Your mom is a woman?
Yeah. I work with women. And so that wasn't a great defense. And then, I thought Jamal was, again, so great. And then to lose, we had that incredible moment, the tribal council last week where Kelly and Jamal talked about all these issues with the Women's Alliance, and it was like a real thoughtful conversation. We lose them both tonight.
Yeah. Firstly, for Aaron, like, how self-centering is it to be like, there's no way this could be happening because otherwise I would know about it? I mean, even if he would have just have said, I've spoken to Elizabeth and Missy, they don't feel uncomfortable, that would have been bad enough, because it, you know, it's not just like all the women or none of the women feel uncomfortable. Like, they all have their individual experiences. So that's its own thing. But for him to be like, look, this would be way more about me if it was really happening. And it doesn't seem to be. It's a little crazy. But I think Kelly and Jamal kind of wrote in from the pre-swap. I mean, from the pre-merge, from the swap, like a little bit riding high on like how much progression they were getting into the show. And they talked about like the race relations and then like the feminism stuff last week. And like that tribe was really on like a bit of a good path. And then it just like came crashing down this episode.
Yeah. Really, really rough. And look, I'm sure Aaron was coming from a good place there. And, you know, if he was not in the loop on this stuff and he had a friendship with Dan, you know, he's coming to his defense, needs to be more open-minded about things that are going on. But again, we come back to players being very self-interested also. And Aaron is very self-interested in keeping new Vokai together. It seems like, you know, I talked about how they needed to throw a challenge, but it seemed like that, no, they weren't going to throw a challenge. They were going to bond together. And that group of seven looks like that they could put gong the other side out completely.
Yeah, I mean, the Lyro 4 were a group that I thought were coming into the merger sitting ducks, having just did what they did against, you know, Tommy and Lauren, and I was like, they can never work with them again. What a terrible basis for a relationship. So like, in terms of the desperation Missy and Elizabeth might have felt in using this very sensitive stuff to their advantage, in terms of Aaron maybe saying some insensitive things, like, this is the place that they're coming from. I think the place of maybe more desperation than anyone came into the game at the merge. I am surprised that it worked out so well for them. Like, what a credit to their social game that they could do it. But yeah, I mean, I think Aaron, you know, he's not a terrible person for saying that, but I think it is a good lesson about like kind of thinking about what you say, kind of listening to people and how like your perspective might not be like the global perspective on an issue.
Yes, totally agree. I wonder, Shannon, just to talk about it from the game perspective, for Tommy and Lauren, was this the right way to go in terms of sticking with the new, with the swap version of Lyro as opposed to going back with the original? I know Dan's a part of both fixtures, but that, did you like it for them that they ended up going all in with the swap version? Because by my math, there's still four people from the original Lyro and then three of them from Nouveau Kai, unless they feel like Aaron is, you know, all in with them, or Aaron and Missy are all in with them, and then they're going to get rid of Elaine and Elizabeth and Dan.
Yeah, I cannot believe, firstly, that the swap tribe is what became the major groups in this episode. Really, especially at what happened at that Jason Tribal Council. I feel like we see Missy placating people after Blindside a lot, and she must be like exceptionally good at that, that she was able to mend these relationships. I feel like her relationship with Lauren is super, super key here in kind of making sure the Lyro 4 won out in those swing votes of Tommy and Lauren. In terms of like it being a mistake, I think that Tommy and Lauren were trying to have their cake and eat it too. It was like, take the Lyro 4 and then also take Kelly and Janet, who they were really close to, and then have the Alliance just be like all their best friends. And maybe it's, you know, to Kelly's discredit that she came out against that so antagonistically that she was like, no, to this terrible plan for her, like truly a very bad plan for her. But maybe, you know, maybe
yeah, Tommy of all people was like, oh, yeah. It was like, I wasn't even hurt. I couldn't like, yeah.
Why did she want to do exactly what I wanted to do?
Guess how Kelly felt.
Yeah, that's true. But maybe they just felt like the Lyro 4 were more amenable to their plans. Maybe they thought the Lyro 4 were following them a little bit more, whereas Kelly especially seemed to want to be taking control a little bit more. So maybe they thought they went with a more malleable group of people.
Yeah, I just feel like that they're giving a lot of power to Missy. I mean, I don't even know. We didn't really see a ton in terms of, you know, Missy and Aaron went off to look for the idol, but we saw a lot of Missy and Elizabeth. It feels like that they're just like ceding them a lot of power in the game.
Well, it seems like, to Tommy and Lauren's credit, like they brought in Dean, who seemed like the one free agent.
So don't even get me started about Dean tonight.
What did Dean do tonight? Was Dean even really in the episode?
Now, well, look, he's that Shannon. As the number one Kelly stan out there. Look, I didn't like Kelly's move last week. I didn't like Kelly's move.
I did, and I was wrong.
And I'm not even gonna pull a fish back and be like, oh, I was right.
You're doing that literally as we speak.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. And
you mentioned it.
But that, you know, we felt like, okay, well, you know what? What if, you know, can she trust Nora? I don't know. I don't know how well she's going to hold up under questioning. But it's like, okay, well, Dean, okay, even if she has Dean in her back pocket, frickin' Dean knew the plan. Kelly gave him an idol at the last tribal council.
Right.
He would have been voted out of the game if not by for the grace of Kelly, not a Grace Kelly pun, and he can't say like, hey, like, you know, heads up, you know, it's you tonight. Detective Kowalski really was not great. I hope that Kelly and the ex-girlfriend really commiserate about this guy. Like, see, I told you he was no good. Don't even get me started on Dean. And he could have told her this whole thing.
Yeah.
This whole thing. He could have been the person like, hey, Kelly, play your idol.
Yeah, and they didn't even have enough numbers to split the vote, so he couldn't even be worried that it would like come back on him.
Yeah, not that he would have known, not that he knew she had not one but two idols, but he could have. I mean, she did. She saved him. He was that she was in like 3 days later. It wasn't
no one
even
does
like
that on Survivor. Like no one is like, oh, you helped me out, so I'm helping you.
Well,
like,
that,
does anyone do that?
Right? No. That's the biggest reason why, or one of the reasons why, giving the idol away is like, oh, they're going to be loyal to me. They'll be in my pocket. They're like, oh, I did that. I saved myself because I played such a good social game that Kelly saved me. That's I'm doing awesome.
Okay. Well, in Dean's defense, which is maybe another thing I shouldn't. No, Dean's fine. Firstly, two things. One, the curse of Angelina said that Kelly has to go home with both idols in her pocket. So he can't like work against the curse.
Yeah.
The second thing is like now he's in a new majority and they've brought him in and they've given him a home. And that majority is Tommy and Lauren. is it better for his game if Kelly is still around? Like, he should maybe just lay low and stick with his majority, you know, other than just like it being a little bit mean to let Kelly go home with two idols, not that he knew, after she had just saved him. From a game perspective, like, I can see like finding a little comfy home under Tommy's arm, just like cuddling in up there and like not saving Kelly because she's not useful to you anymore.
I think she was still useful for him. I think when somebody
now more powerful than her,
when somebody does you a favor, it makes the like, or if you do somebody a favor, then subconsciously you like them more. And if Dean could capitalize on that, Kelly was never going to get rid of him because she's like, oh, he owes me. I got to keep Dean in the game. It's just
But last week, all of you were saying on the podcast, like, that Dean should completely out Kelly, which he didn't even do, that we saw. I mean, Nora did not hold up to questioning. I didn't think that Dean would. Like, I trusted Kelly's read on that relationship, which to a degree, I think I was a little bit right about. Like, he didn't immediately go back and out her. He was like, I did it myself, you know, so there must have been a connection there. But hard to, like, make waves. So then what, he's voting with the majority against someone he knows or thinks could have an idol. He's tipped her off. It's a little bit too sneaky for someone who has no power.
I hear you. It stinks. It stinks that I'm
all upset about this.
I'm salty that Kelly went home with two idols in her pocket, and the guy she saved with an idol the other day, in the last episode, knew and didn't say anything. You know, but what are you going to do? He didn't. She didn't do anything to Dean. And I also
two idols.
Yeah,
is that the first time since James? Like that? Ugh, painful.
Yeah, it might be. Also, Val Collins voted out famously with two idols. And not to go too like too far down the conspiracy rabbit hole, I really think that if Jack was still in the game and not Dean, I do think that Jack is tied into both Jamal and to Tommy. And I wonder if they would have told Jack the plan, where he would have come down on it. Would he have said something to Jamal? I think it's a whole different alternate history that we'll never get to find out. Somebody restart the Brant Steel.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kelly played a little too hard, probably in general, and that probably works into it. I mean, she came in here and she misjudged Tommy and Lauren. That's a big thing. You know, she lost that battle of relationships, a relationship she's had since day one, relationship she successfully voted with at the Molly vote, versus the Lyra people who had never successfully voted with Tommy and Lauren before tonight, people who had made them cry, people that they should have really been on either side of, and those were the people they were competing against with Tommy and Lauren's loyalty, relationships, and vote, and they lost. So, like, they, to a degree, have to wear that. Missy won out here over Kelly in the relationship for Lauren, and then, like, more broadly, they, you know, the Lyra Four just won that relationship and those numbers.
Jamal really got hosed tonight. Right.
It was like the one funny thing in this like sad night of so much.
It was not funny. It was not funny what happened to Jamal.
The Island of the Idol stuff was funny in its ridiculousness. Like, firstly, Sandra and Rob were so smug. Do you feel like they just took the day off? It was like the boat's coming. Oh, my God, we don't have anything planned. Like, this is a terrible non-lesson. This does not count as a lesson.
Shannon, you know where they really screwed up tonight? Where when we had this whole issue come up with Dan, that we get.
They didn't just give him the vote.
No. That we get on the radio and like, Sandra, we have a situation out here that Sandra would set Dan straight in no time flat.
I mean, he went up against Janet, and I feel like Janet should be able to do that. Like,
no,
said no. Undoable.
That between Sandra and get Rob there too. Hey, smarten up. What's the matter with you?
Your lesson is in appropriate behavior.
Yes, Sandra's smack him on the side of the head.
Okay, Dan, like, if you touch anyone inappropriately, you will lose your vote.
Yeah.
You will get an idol if you can go 24 hours without making someone feel uncomfortable. This is how they should do it in workplaces as well. Get Sandra and Rob there in the workplace.
I think they would be a good duo.
Yeah.
But instead, they're taunting Jamal. And they come up with this cockamamie thing of that, okay, Jamal, you lost your vote. And now today's lesson is sabotage. And which reminds me that hold off on your wand offs this week. We have something I'll talk about it at the end of the show of what we have in store instead for this week. But that, it's sabotage. And you get to make a fake advantage and give it to somebody. And Shannon, why was Jamal incentivized to go make a fake advantage and then stand in front of everybody to do this? Why couldn't Jamal be like, hey, you know what? You know what I'm going to do with this fake piece of paper? That's it. I'm going to rip it. That this is a dumb idea. I don't have to do this. Like, they took his vote away already. It wasn't like, oh, I need to get my vote back by giving this away.
Firstly, I thought you were going to say they should have like pushed Dan on the path to find that like cursed.
Sure. Well, I'm open to anything.
But again, the game is just like truly not rigged in a very ugly way, it seems. I do love the idea that the lesson should have been inappropriate touching. But yeah, for Jamal, this was funny. Like, I know it wasn't a funny night and I'm really sad to lose Jamal, but the look on his face, like, firstly, he was so over it. They took away his vote for no reason. They were so smug about it. They were looking at him like, there's your lesson. Then they're like, but we'll give you this thing. And then he opens it and he's just like, it is blank. Like, that's to me is a no, like, the new, this is not an advantage. Like, mm-hmm. They were like, you get one thing. And it was a pencil and blank paper. They're like, have you ever seen a pencil before? I know he has. Like, I know that.
He does work in a school. Team. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is not really anything good. And I guess it kind of comes down to, like, you know, there's no free lunch. Maybe just because you can doesn't mean you should, because he should not have like a really obviously written advantage, given it to Dean. Like, what does that achieve? I only just watched the episode, so I'm trying to work out, like, is there any benefit to that?
Dean did not
like the present.
I don't think so. And, you know, if anything, you know, he should have gone back and said like, oh, this is what I got. I got a note that said I lost my vote. Like, you know, do something of to, I just feel like that if he did something to like make himself look worse, I feel like that then it would be better for him. But then I don't know why was he told he had to do this? Because Jamal,
he
seems like, a really smart player. I don't know why he would have felt the need to do this other than if they told him he had to.
If Rob and Sandra, after telling me how to not inappropriately touch people, told me that I had to make a fake advantage and give it to people, I would write it out. I would go to my number one ally and be like, I have to give you this advantage. Like, before I would give it to an enemy in Dean publicly, make him feel bad, make yourself a threat. Because at that stage, you know, old, new Vokai, you know, the Janet, Jamal, Nora, Karishma contingent are on the back foot. They're probably going to go for someone who is the biggest threat of those people. So I guess being like, look, I just lost my vote, might make him seem a little pathetic, might make him the least of a threat of those people, because they're going to go for someone, I think, who's quite threatening of that group once they're already in the minority. So look, a horrible situation for him to be in. No real winning there, but he certainly made it worse by the lie, by the fake note, by taking them up on this like terrible, terrible offer.
Yeah. Shannon, it almost feels like that the lesson here was like identical to last week with Janet, where the only way to win the game was to not play. Oh, you know, should Jamal have said like, no, I'm not doing this.
Yes.
And Rob would have been, you want to know why I'm smiling? Because you passed the test. You're not supposed to do this. This is a bad idea.
Yeah, see, 100% should not have done it. I mean, look, if Rob and Sandra are smiling smugly at you, that's a good cue to not take whatever they're offering to you. Rob and Sandra were just like there to make him fail. This was not a lesson. I know that we said they were going to run out eventually, but this was not a good way to run out of lessons.
Right, right. I really thought that we were going to get some sort of a reveal of Rob and Sandra in terms of... Now, we're starting to see a lot of people that went to Island of the Idols have been voted out, where we had Vince voted out, and now Jamal voted out, and then also we had Kelly voted out earlier in this episode. So who's left in the game? I guess Nora, yeah. Elizabeth, and Elaine, I think, are the only people that went to the Island of the Idols.
This is really hard for me to do.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. So somehow it's actually still like of the 11 people left in the game, only three know what the Island of the Idols is. So it's actually, for the producer's sake of trying to keep it a secret, has been, remarkably well kept.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But a lot of people who never went to Island of the Idols went home as well. So Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I used to think Island of the Idols was bad. And then today when they literally were like, there's nothing for you to do except like you lose a vote and then have the opportunity to make it even worse for yourself. Like, they're not even trying to pretend this is a positive thing anymore.
Shen, if you're on Survivor, as it's season 40, season 41, you see a note hanging from the tree. What do? Run the other way?
Yeah, why would they even make that the lesson? They definitely want people to find and use things. So now they're telling people like, look, if you find something, just like, let it go. I mean, I feel like in the way I approach the game and hating all the mechanisms and wanting it to be a more social game, like that's what I'm preaching to them. But I don't know why the show is preaching that to the contestants. That is a bad lesson to teach for future contestants, surely.
Yeah. Lots of bad lessons learned tonight by Survivor. Not great. Is there any hope that we could see the group that's on the outs, which I guess is now, what, Janet and Karishma?
And Nora.
And Nora. And I feel like that Nora's going to be fine. Is there any chance that it's not Janet this next vote?
Yeah, I worry for Janet. I think Karishma and Nora are fine, and they're being picked up in a numbers game of this new majority at a point. Janet could go home and then we start kind of fracturing. And that would suck. I can't take much more than what I've been through tonight when Kelly went home with two idols in a really, really murky, really murky episode. And Janet is just like she's my protector. And I need her in the game. I love Janet so much. Like a human award. Just amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was so tough to get through where not only did everything happen with Kelly, but then where Janet was, okay, I'm going to be, you know, your guardian angel. I'm going to step up and I'm going to speak up for all the women because it's right. And then to have her then, you know, dragged in the start of the second hour after she had that conversation with Dan, with Elizabeth and Missy. It was very difficult to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Dan doesn't know exactly what's going on, but his eye is definitely misplaced. Like, he should be upset at his allies if he knew all the facts in Elizabeth and Missy, who did straight out deny mm-hmm. it. But those are the people who played up what he was doing for their games. And Janet, I think, was very genuine the whole time. I think this has been more than a game for Janet the whole time. It's been beautiful to watch. And sometimes it's even been in the secret scenes, but she's gone out there to be a mentor for these younger women. She's a bit older. She's been in a male dominated field. Her relationship with Kelly in particular, like she's gone out there to be a real leader, a real teacher. The fact that women would feel more comfortable just by having her there, I think speaks to her power, like in a way that it really is beyond the game. Like what an incredible impact and presence to have that people can feel that way about you. I think that is unbelievable from a Janet perspective. In case you can't tell, I love Janet.
Yeah, I get that. Do you feel, is there any good that comes out of this episode tonight in the way that Survivor ended up handling this? Do you feel like that in workplaces and schools and any sort of place where that this type of thing goes on and goes unchecked, do you feel like that there's any chance that this helped the discourse?
Unless they're starting a Boston Rob and Sandra inappropriate touching workshop, which I think could be really great. No, not really. But then it's like, I don't know. Is there one person who hears Aaron saying, this can't be happening because I don't know about it, and thinks I've reacted like that and I was wrong? Well, if there is one person, then yes, there's value in that.
I don't think it's what Aaron said. I think it's what Jamal said in response to that. I think that that was something where that if you are hearing those types of stories or somebody, you know, there is an accuser, then instead of being dismissive as Aaron was, that, you know, maybe there are some people, some viewers of the show that end up hearing the wise words of Jamal.
I agree. It's the people who have been in Aaron's shoes who have said, I'm on board. I have a mother. I have a sister. But it's not happening because it doesn't directly involve me. And then it's hearing Jamal's very intelligent response to that and then kind of taking a look inward. Are people going to do that? I don't know. If they do, it is a good consequence from it.
Right.
You know, for all of the terrible things that can happen in this game, for all the fact that we can't control what happens, clearly. It really just is human society, and the stuff does happen in society. It is on prime time, and it might make some people look inwards. And if that is true, I wouldn't say it was worth it, but it's definitely something like I will take in the midst of this like emotional trauma we've all been through tonight.
Shannon, how do you think that Jeff Probst did with this discussion at this second tribal council, where Dan clearly did not want to talk about this, that he wanted to move on, didn't know why it was the subject, and Jeff stayed with it, said, I'm going to keep bringing it up until day 39 if you don't want to talk about it. It's obviously something that's on the minds of the players. Did you feel like that Jeff did a good job of moderating this discussion?
Yeah, I feel like I need to go rewatch that tribal council, but I think he did, you know, as well as he maybe could have, but it was too complex an issue at that point to really kind of neatly iron out. I know Jeff likes to get it neat and ironed out. I think that's probably the talk show host in him. Mm-hmm. And it's not neat, and it's very gray, and it's very complex, and there's more there than just like what Dan was doing, which is a huge thing, obviously, but it's how everyone else reacted to it, and it's all of those components that are just very, very difficult, I think, to talk about in this manner, especially when there's subterfuge involved in the game. You don't know really what's true, and then it's edited down for us. Very, very hard to wrap that up in a neat little package of this tribal council for Jeff or for anyone.
Yeah, I also want to respond to something that I think is a pretty ice cold take that's out there that I've seen to some degree, where some people I've seen say, oh, see, this is Survivor, that they're trying to turn this into, you know, episode of the week, and, you know, trying to make it that if anybody thinks that Survivor production was like, oh, sexual harassment, all right, here we go. Yeah. We're nice. All right, this is going to be killer episode. They did not want this. And, you know, I do have to applaud them of that. Hey, it's happening. We need to, you know, address it and make it part of this experience that people are having there over these 39 days.
Yeah, and it worked into last week as well. Like, I had some replies to my tweets, some people I did not ask to come into my mentions being like, you know, why is there politics in Survivor? It's like, if you don't understand that this game is political, is social, is cultural, and these parts all form Survivor, and that without those things, Survivor is a shell of itself, then you just don't understand what you're watching. Then I think you're just watching the challenges, because that works into all of this. This happens in society, and Survivor is a mini society. It's so unfortunate that it happens. It's unfortunate that it happened tonight, but it did, and it would, and that could happen on Survivor. We've seen some ugly things happen on the show. This was one of them. It is absolutely not production created. It's just society in a very, very intense environment in a game for $1 million. It is going to happen from time to time. And it's very unfortunate that it did tonight, of course.
Okay. All right. Let's bring in some questions and let's see how this goes. Let's start with Stephanie has a question. How was Jamal going to win or lose that test? It seemed like that there was no grading. There was no pass fail to what Jamal was faced with tonight.
I think what they were trying to say is that he failed the second he took the note. They're saying that he would have passed if he'd seen it and been like, which for some reason, based on zero precedent, that would have been winning.
Hey, you ever see those Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoons? And then there's a sign that says, hey, grab this thing. It's always a bad thing for the coyote.
But next time there will be a note, and it'll be a good thing. So where is the consistency in this lesson?
Not good.
Is the lesson never grab the note? I don't feel that's a truism of Survivor.
I mean, what is this? Like community chest of like, oh, go directly to jail. Oh, come on.
That's exactly what he had tonight. I just feel like Rob and Sandra are like, they're out of ideas. There's not that much you can do. And if tonight wasn't a classic example of we don't have any more to give you, then I don't know what was.
Okay. All right. Let's take a question from Shannon. What does Joe Daly have to say?
Was Jamal not allowed to write an advantage for himself on that paper on IOI that could have saved him tonight? The advantage wasn't real, so...
Yeah, but could he said this is I got the the immunity tonight, so
I have this handwritten idol clue with no 10 idol
votes
attached to it.
Yeah,
you guys can't vote me out. I am safe. Undefeated. So there was no winning for Jamal. I can't criticize.
Jamal really got hosed. Okay, how about this, Shannon? If Jamal did not go to the Island of the Idols, does he get voted out in this episode?
Probably.
You think? Like, yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, it's between like Karishma, Janet, Jamal. They're all threatening in their own way. I think Jamal's a very big threat in that. So I could see him going home.
Speaking of threatening, How about Aaron? Won immunities in both hours of this episode. Has Aaron painted a gigantic target on his back?
Possibly, but like what numbers are coming up against him?
Mm-hmm.
Because Vokai have turned inwards. If Tommy and Lauren are going to Nora and Janet and saying, like, let's get back together and vote out Aaron, do those relationships still exist? I think the Lyra 4 just did so well socially in this episode that they did kind of insulate themselves, which they had no right to do because they are massive threats, and yet they're in a really good social spot.
Okay. This is an interesting question from Thomas, who says, it seems that Aaron is proving to be a challenge beast. Is he going to be able to get to the end occasionally winning and hoping that the women keep targeting themselves? Aaron has definitely proved himself to be very dominant in these challenges. In terms of the women targeting themselves, is the idea of the Women's Alliance, is that DOA at this point?
I mean, is it like a women's alliance? There are definitely like female-centric relationships that really do like, you know, they bonded because of how close they were as women. I know that it was a big thing for Missy and Lauren, which I think was like the central relationship of this episode, and that really connected those groups together. So it's not like a women's alliance, more than it's just like women working together and that having a big mm-hmm. part of their relationship. But Aaron was my preseason winner pick, and I did not feel good about it after episode one. And now I'm like, it's Modern Survivor. He's going to win some challenges. He'll probably find a few idols because that's usually the type that at least can find it and play it without going home with it. Aaron might now win the game. So,
yeah. Yeah. I don't know if necessarily like the women through line is still there. I feel like that, yeah, Missy and Lauren are tight. It seems like that Elizabeth then is tight with Missy and then also mm-hmm. seems to still have that relationship with Elaine. I thought Elaine, you almost forgot she was on the show tonight. I wonder mm-hmm. where Elaine was on all of this in this two-part episode tonight.
Yeah, it's really true, especially in a night that was really good for the Lyra 4, a four that yeah. she kept intact 2 weeks ago that are now in a really good position like, in the game.
Either I'd say that either Elaine had nothing to say or Elaine had nothing to say that we wanted us to hear if they still want us to like Elaine.
Yeah. Interesting way. Like if you ever wanted to be purple, this was the night to be purple, right. I think. Like you just asked for that. For that invisible edgy grading tonight of all nights.
Yeah. And she was also the one that told Dan, like, hey, Dan, just so you know, don't get squirrely.
Yeah. I mean, strategically, they did super well. Like, they connected Dan to them. It's icky.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think all of the Lyra 4 did really well in connecting to Dan, Tommy, and Lauren. Like, being Stephen Fishback and giving out the fishy that I want to give, I would give it to Missy. Mm-hmm. She played the best tonight. I think that the Lyra 4 should not have been in a good spot, and they are. Largely due to her play, largely due to her relationship with Lauren. But again, did she cross a line? I think most people are going to say yes. Strategically, though, you can't fault what she did. Humanly, I'm a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think we're all there with you.
Everyone's a little uncomfortable right now.
It looks like that we're going to get two people going out in the next episode. Is this sort of like, is this like a throwback to, are we yada yada-ing the Pagong?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Is it two people at one tribal council? Because then you're not going to change course for the second vote. So that might save Janet, or it might doom like a Karishma.
Yeah, it seemed like in the preview they talked about, hey, it's two for one.
Right. So you got to take out two people from the same group. So either you're just going to take out Janet, and then you didn't want to take out Karishma or Nora, but like they're there with her, and they'll be the second vote. Or you're like, well, now we can't afford to take out Janet because we have to flip now.
Yeah, they could get screwed. They could go home as like, okay, well, they're an easy second person to get rid of. But if you had 3 days to think about it, you come up with a different plan than voting out Nora or Karishma.
You would never, ever, if you had time, vote out Nora or Karishma. I'm sure you would flip at that point. But mm-hmm. once Janet is gone, what are you going to talk during tribal council and take out Janet and then turn on each other? Like in the space of minutes, there's no way people are going to do that.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, I thought that Kelly's move was really good last week. I don't really know what I think anymore. I might be bad at predicting the game.
Okay. All right. This is a question from Adam. What does Adam have to say?
Shouldn't Survivor have let Kelly address the issue from the jury, sickening to literally have her silenced by a gay mechanic for a conversation much bigger than the game?
Yeah, I've seen that on Twitter and then in our Facebook group. People said, you know, that they should have had Kelly testify at the tribal council. Well, I mean, what do you think?
So hard. Such waters we haven't been into. From a human level, yes. The fact that she couldn't speak in the situation is physically nauseating. From a game perspective, as someone who just gave Missy the fishy, she shouldn't be allowed to speak. It has game repercussions. She would be saying that, you know, Missy and Elizabeth had come to her and said they were uncomfortable, which outs their strategy, which unfortunately, you know, it's strategy that was tied up in this very sensitive thing, but it is their gameplay. So from a gameplay perspective, I don't think that she should have been able to speak, but we've probably gotten to the point now that this is a lot bigger than the game. So that's a difficult one to ask.
Yeah, I think that she is going to be very interesting to hear from in terms of that, you know, how does she want to be depicted in all of this, whether or not that she felt like that it was something that it was not bothering her to the point where she wanted to get him, get Dan out of the game, or that she feels like that he pretend, you know, I don't know what she's going to be able to say about all of this, of like whether she feels like that he should have been at the point where she did give a warning and she wanted to see him pulled from the game. I don't know what she's going to be able to tell us, but I am, you know, very interested to hear what she has to say.
I mean, it bothered her. Those tears were not fake and confessional. You don't lie in your confessional. But, you know, she had to make a strategic sacrifice in going for Missy. The merge vote is massive. The merge vote sets the table. She thought Missy was a better strategic choice. She had to put her comfort to the side for that, which is a shame. It was also the wrong strategic move, probably. So that's a shame in and of itself. But it doesn't take away. Like, people might say, well, if she was so uncomfortable, then she should have just, you know, originally gone with Dan. You know, how could she have been that uncomfortable if she was planning on Missy? It's like she's playing a game for $1 million. She put her comfort second, which is abhorrent. Yeah. She shouldn't have to do that. But at the same time, can you blame her for making what she thinks is the best strategic move in a game she's playing really hard?
Is it also possible that she felt like, okay, there was the issue with Dan in the beginning of the game. Then she was away from him and it was sort of like a little bit out of sight, out of mind. And it's like, okay, when I get to the merge, it won't be that bad. Janet's around. Okay, we got to, you know, focus on priorities. And then once he starts putting his hands through her hair and then touching her head, that it all came back of like, I can't do this. I can't be around this guy.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I also think there's a degree of like, they've been separated. And then she comes back and these women are saying, while you were gone, we've also felt that way. And she seems like a very empathetic person. Mm-hmm. And that got to her too. So that made it worse as well, that it wasn't just her and that it was a communal thing. We saw her talking last week. Like, this was like an injustice at that point, not just a personal injustice, but like a communal injustice that she thought she was fighting for, but she wasn't really, because they weren't being very authentic with her.
Yeah. And I feel like that conversation with Missy and with Kelly, that they were on the same page and it was like, all right, we're getting somewhere with this. This is really that we got the ball rolling with it. And then once, was it Lauren that came back? I was like, no, she wants to vote you out. Why is she told? And that's the problem with Survivor, where these people are having like a human conversation and then like, oh, what are they talking about? Oh, they must be strategizing.
But I don't feel that it was a human conversation from Missy's perspective. Like, again, I can't speak to her in Elizabeth's comfort level, and I kind of hate that I'm having
to. So you feel like that Missy was potentially stringing Kelly along when she was having that conversation? Because it seemed like she was bringing up real feelings, but maybe she would. It's so hard to tell.
Yeah, it's so hard. I think she and Elizabeth, I wish I'd heard a little bit more from Missy about how comfortable she was, because we heard it from Elizabeth, we heard it from Kelly. So where was Missy in all this? But I do think there was a level of discomfort. I cannot speak for them of what that discomfort was, but I don't think it was near to the level that Kelly felt. And I think that to bond with her, Missy took it to that place and she elevated it to that place for gameplay reasons. She, you know, play it up. Those were the words used. And I think that made Kelly feel more upset. So I don't know. Is it just like, ugh, you know, gross, creepy Uncle Dan, you know, but I'm not really that bothered by it. As I said, you know, everything they were saying, the toe touching, all of it, completely factual as shown to us in the edit, but it's about how they were reacting to that. And I don't think we really know, but all I do know is I think it was 100% genuine from Kelly and it was not 100% genuine for Elizabeth and Missy. The percentage I cannot give you, but it was gameplay to a degree, to maybe to a large degree.
Okay. Force of Will says, should David Wright get royalties for this Advantage idea from IOI? He definitely deserved it. Now, Shannon, once upon a time, you were our David Wright expert going into, you studied David Wright's game. You really came up with the David Wright theory of playing the game of always vote out the person you trust the least and always keep the person that you trust the most, which was crystallized beautifully by yourself. So David Wright wanted to make a fake Advantage. Do you think that David Wright took calligraphy courses?
Well, David Wright, literally, I think he did study the font.
Penmanship, yes.
The way that
I believe it.
Jamal was just like, I owe you one idol. Like, it was not very neat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't even, but David Wright wanted to make advantages that seemed like they were real advantages that people had found. Like Jamal said, he had written it out because how could you hide that? It was clearly a handwritten letter.
Yeah.
What was the situation he was put in?
Yeah, it's like the advantage, like they could have had like, okay, here's three advantages, but they're not real, but you have to give it to everybody. You go back and give it, like they could have like spotted Jamal a fake legacy advantage. And now you have to give it to Dean in front of everybody. And then he has to suss out if it's real or not, like to make him like, give him a crayon and then like, all right, write your own advantage. You know, it's
giving him an advantage would have been literally the least they could have done. Instead, they were like, a pencil. How about that? Mm-hmm. Haven't seen a pencil before. And he's like, I guess not really on Survivor. And they're like, you're welcome. Horrible interaction between Jamal and Robin Sandra, honestly.
Okay. All right. What does Joe have to say?
I feel like I had a harder time finding Easter eggs in my backyard as a kid than these castaways do finding hidden immunity idols on a deserted island. What do you think?
Shannon, what was up with Aaron and Missy? All right, well, we're going to go look for the idol. Get the shovel. What was that? Have you ever seen people like, we're going off looking for the idol?
Simon Black special, Survivor AU reference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people looking. Like, every time there's going to be, like...
Did they have a map? Yeah.
But, like, people are going to find it, especially when, like, Jamal plays it and they all go looking. Do we ever see... I mean, we wouldn't see it if they didn't find anything. But I feel like every time there's, like, a communal mad treasure hunt, someone's coming out with an idol.
Yeah. This is a question. Being Loud says, did Karishma say she hasn't eaten in 20 days? What about Applebee's? She didn't get Applebee's. That was her favorite sit-down restaurant. And then she didn't get to go to it.
Yeah. How could you not have remembered that she like literally lost that challenge and Reddit was so mad?
No, I did say the same thing, Shannon. I'm like, wait, hold on. Didn't she have Applebee's? I'm like, no, she loves Applebee's, but she didn't get to eat it. Okay. Okay. How about this question from Maura?
Did anyone left come out of this clean?
Okay.
Who's
our... yes, Joe, that... All right. Who are unproblematic heroes tonight? Start with tier one. Well, okay. And leave Jamal and Kelly off to the side because they're there.
Oh, no.
But of the unproblematic heroes left in the game, we start with Janet 1.
Okay, this should be a game for like the B&B. It's like who is still okay to root for on this season.
Okay.
Nora was literally like, I want to vote out Dan because he's making Kelly feel like that. That was very sweet.
Yeah, but I think, did she vote for Jamal? I feel like that, she's still top three at this point. Karishma, I think, still,
didn't do anything wrong.
She's still up there. And,
everyone else voted out Kelly, right? Instead of Dan, so
yeah,
that in the least
everybody else, you know, better luck next week. Hope you can bounce back.
It really is like it. Like I'm not going to spoil anything of the Survivor South Africa thing, but it just reminds me of it so much because it was such a toxic incident, and people I think reacted very similarly. Having not been online, I can imagine that it's very much like we hate them all, and then we still had to watch, you know, all of them. We still had to root for some of them, and we had to find the nuance in their games, and we had to be able to analyze it and watch it. So it's about coming out of this now. I mean, Rob, you'll navigate that with the fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll hold our hand through all of this.
We'll be back here week after week to talk it through. And
I'm guessing your career choice at this point.
No. I mean that this is still the great gift of my life to get to talk about this show and get to do what I do. And I feel like that to have, you know, a responsible, thoughtful conversation is, you know, I think that what is appropriate on a night like this. And I really feel like that, Shannon, you were an amazing person to be here and talk about this stuff with, because it is not easy.
It was hard, I'm not gonna lie. But I feel super lucky, obviously, to be on Nodals anyway. But even like to have this conversation, like as you said, I don't know if I said everything correctly, and it's very nuanced, it's very, very complex, it's really is difficult. But you know, in watching it, I was like, I do have a lot of thoughts in this, and I am very happy that I get the platform to talk about it. Survivor's never been just a game to me. I think it is an important thing to talk about. I'm glad I get to do it.
Yeah. And there's so many people that watch the show and it does affect the lives. And I talk to so many people over the course of what I do that Survivor has affected their lives in so many different ways. And so all these years that the show has been on, and it's not just a show to the people that follow, you know, all these podcasts. And so it is really important that we get this kind of stuff right when it comes up. And Shannon, let me bring in this Jake Larson. Says, thanks at Rob Cesternino. Hashtag RJP. Shannon Gates is the literal best. Having her speak so eloquently on such an important issue was awesome. Usually I'm here for her strategic chops and silly antics, but she's also so great with the sensitive topics. I stan in Shannon. Hashtag bio stan. There you go.
I love getting the immediate feedback. I've never done live before, and that's really fun. Also, maybe immediate negative feedback.
Yes.
It's all part of the same thing. We'll find out.
I haven't refreshed my Twitter, so it could be...
I've been on Twitter now.
Yeah, I could be dragged as we speak. So we'll see. But if we got anything wrong, here's where things, you know, we're going to come full circle. Going to talk with Kelly Wentworth tomorrow. If you have feedback about the show, you can send in emails, survivor@robinswebsite.com. You could send in your feedback. So I'm recording with Kelly later on in the day, so we'll have the opportunity to, I'll screen through some voicemails if you have any for Kelly. robinswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And so we'll get your questions in for Kelly coming up on Thursday. And then I'm going to talk with the First Lady of Podcasting on Friday. But what we're going to do is that if there are anybody, you know, out there in the Survivor community that has, you know, especially strong takes that would like to be part of that conversation. I mean, I don't think we'll be able to talk to 100 people, but maybe we'll have a couple of guests on with us as we continue to talk this through. And when we get to the let's talk about what's coming up a little bit. Of course, the great Shannon Gates covers our international survivor chief correspondent. She had a great interview with Nico, the host of Survivor South Africa. Look at you, Shannon.
That was so fun. People need to check that out. He was so generous with his time. Mike and I both spoke to him, and so much amazing insight. You know, he auditioned for the first season of Survivor South Africa, bit of a spoiler from the interview, and so did Lurubuto, who we interviewed, who's the series director. Like, that's why the series is so great. It is made by people who truly love the show. So definitely check out that interview with Nico.
Shannon, when you interview Nico, do you get an email from Jonathan LaPaglia about, hey, well, I thought I was your favorite international Survivor host?
Hey, if JLP ever wants to get on the line, like, why aren't we doing that right now? I'm confused as to why we haven't done it already.
All right. Well, I'm very excited on Thursday to get the chance to talk with Kelly Wentworth. I think she's a great person to have on to talk about a very, you know, delicate week of Survivor. I think that she's such an inspiration to so many women who watch the show. So I am very excited to have her with us to talk about this on Thursday. And then on the B&B this weekend, Jess McKenna, I think that Mike and Liana will give their thoughts on everything that went on in this two-hour episode with Jess McKenna. And then also as well, Nicole Cesternino is going to join me and we'll talk to some other people along the way as well this weekend. And don't forget why Blank lost. It's not a happy story of why Kelly and Jamal lost, but David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis will get into what rules did they break along the way, had to get to this unhappy ending. And so I will be talking with Josh on Monday. I believe Josh has some coverage up. I haven't checked, refreshed my Twitter, so I don't want to announce any scoops, but I believe that Josh does have some coverage coming tonight about the episode. So we'll check. Be sure to follow at Round Howard. And then Shannon, your friend of mine, Nick Iadanza, is going to join us for talk some this week in Survivor with Jordan Kalish on Monday. And then keep an eye out for those exit interviews. When I know when they're coming, I will let you all know when my conversation with Kelly and Jamal might be scheduled for. So that's what's coming up. Make sure you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast and the Rehap Ups to make sure you see everything that's going on, or head on over to robhasawebsite.com. Of course.
And also, just in case that wasn't enough, also, I have a Survivor Global coming on Saturday.
Yes, we didn't have the image up.
Yes, I had already planned that when I was asked to do this, so you'll get double takes from me, but also takes from the great Lisa Stanger, RHAP patron, Survivor New Zealand player.
Our own.
She is just a legend, so I can't wait to hear her thoughts, because she is one of the best strategic players going around in general, globally, so it will be awesome to get her takes.
Yeah, and if you want to hear Shannon's coverage on the Survivor Global coverage, she's talking about U.S. Survivor with the international Survivor players who have been the superstars that we've talked about over these last couple seasons. You can get that in our Survivor podcast feed and our Rehap Ups feed as well. So be on the lookout for that. And of course, follow the great Shannon Gates on Twitter. That you just Shannon Gates. Is there an underscore in there?
Just at Shannon Gates.
At Shannon Gates. That's so great.
It's nailed perfect it right now, while Gates is my last name for the next 3 weeks, and then it's going to be a little bit not as good.
Yes, and Shannon is getting married this December.
Yes, and speaking of Nick, I mean, I'm about to see Nick at my wedding, so I'm going to listen to his quiz.
Wow. You have the Nick Iadanza coming to your wedding?
Yes, Nick and his beautiful wife, Christine, and his adorable baby, Paloma. All coming. I'm super excited about it. They're flying up. So, yeah, I'm excited to hear him on Twist as well.
Yeah, I'm very excited to catch up with our mutual friend, Nick. Shannon, again, thank you so much for being here and helping. This was a tough assignment that I asked you to join me here for tonight, but you really and went, you know, above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking me. I mean, to be on Survivor Know-It-Alls, it's what I always say about RHAP, hashtag beyond the bucket list, something I never thought I could have wanted to even, you know, have on my bucket list, because it's impossible. Unfortunate that it was in these circumstances, yeah. But I enjoyed our conversation around it. I think that we got a lot out. We'll probably get more insights throughout the week as we think more about it, you know, these being our first takes, but I was grateful to have the conversation with you.
I mean, let's be real. I mean, this went way better than if Steven was here.
Oh, I love Steven. No,
we'll talk to Steven. He'll be back in 2 weeks. And then also, Steven and I are going to be together in Brea, California in 3 weeks from tonight. If you want tickets for that, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/Brea for our Brea live show. I think a lot of survivors are going to be out there with us that night. It's going to be turning into a pretty good crew. And then also one other shout out to Shannon Gates's dad, who moved 100 ice cream sandwiches to make this podcast possible tonight.
Yeah, the internet. I'm currently in Sydney staying at my parents because I live in Melbourne. The internet at my parents' house just like stopped working like 2 hours before the episode was going to be on. So I had to go to my dad's work and turn off all of the noisy things in his office. He runs a tennis club. That's why there's like the bottom of a giant tennis racket behind me. We had to move the ice creams. It was quite a thing, but honestly, he got it done. Thank you so much, Dad.
Yes. Okay. Enjoy some of that ice cream. Thank you, Mr. Gates. Thanks so much, Scott St. Pierre, behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.